Off the Ball.
Find us on Twitter at Off the Ball.
News Talk 106 to 108.
You're very welcome back. I'm delighted to say live on the line we have Irish champion trainer for a 12th time, no less, Willie Mullins. Evening.
Evening, how are you?
Very well. So have you got your feet up somewhere with a cocktail in hand overlooking an ocean, or are you back at it?
No, I'm at home here, and I don't think I need another drink. it's been that sort of a weekend, I think.
An amazing week, all told. I'm sure people are well aware of the general story at this stage, but you started Punchestown week over €500,000 behind Gordon Elliott, and with trebles on Tuesday and Thursday and 6 wins on a Wednesday and 18 wins in total, you managed to surpass him quite comfortably in the end. I'm sure it didn't feel comfortable, and win your 12th Irish champion trainer title. You equaled Tom Draper's record as well, trainer of Arkell. It must be a slightly surreal thing to be in that company.
It is. I mean, someone just mentioned that to me on Friday. And, you know, when we were growing up, Tom Draper was the sort of, you know, the man, and all jump racing revolved around him, with Arkell, Millhouse, all those good horses, you know. So to be sort of in that company, for me, is what I would consider a huge achievement, and delighted.
I'm sure in some respects, before any festival, be it Cheltenham or Punchestown or any big meeting, Willie, you maybe do even a vague mental calculation of how many winners you might expect if things went to plan. Was 18 in your ballpark, or is it beyond all reasonable expectations?
Oh, beyond all reasonable expectations. You know, if someone came to you at the start of the week and said, Willie, would you take 9 winners and whatever bit of prize money, that would be, you probably, most guys would say, of course, yes. Everyone would say it, me included. Mm. It was way out of the ordinary, way out of the ordinary. It was unprecedented, I'd say, you know. I don't know why it came about or where it came from, but everything just seemed to fall into place.
Yeah, okay. Well, you've preempted my next question. I was going to ask why it happened or what you attribute it to. I guess it's hard to know.
Well, you know, just the horses seem to come right in form. And that's the only thing I can think about. I mean, even horses that we thought had worked poorly came out and won. Fahina, you know, we know Fahina has huge ability, but the Saturday previous, myself and Ruby were on the gallops watching him work, and we just turned away from one another. You know, in other words, this isn't good enough.
Right.
Because we were working him against or with a horse that had very disappointing ability this winter.
Yeah.
As it turned out, that horse finished third in a really good race. So the work might have been just better than we thought it was. And but you know, things like that. I mean, we wouldn't have put him down as a winner going into the week. We thought this was probably going to be his swan song and maybe retire him after this race. And then he comes out and runs a race like that.
Yeah, and when you see Fahin working badly so close to Punchestown, as was the case in this instance, is there anything you can do at that stage? There's no time to dramatically improve a horse's form that close to a festival.
Well, there's one very good thing you can do. Pray.
Nice.
You pray. You know, you can't really do much.
Yeah.
You hope that maybe you can just freshen them up or something like that. But when they work bad, they work bad. And you just, you know, it's unless a horse, sometimes like he is an older horse, they get, well, maybe like older players too, they get might get a bit stale at home.
Yeah.
But he had done some lovely bits of work at home before, and that's why he'd been disappointing for us, because he seemed to do nice bits of work at home and then disappointed on the racetrack.
Yeah. I was reading a piece yesterday which said that I guess at some stage last week maybe you felt the horses were ready and things tapered off dramatically enough. You even, I think, went away for a day or two to Waterford. Is that right?
That's what someone just texted me to say that. No, I didn't. Jesus. I'd hardly go to mass on on a preparation for Punchestown, because you know, every day we're just at it. I certainly didn't go anywhere away for a few days.
Okay.
No.
Is it right that you tapered things down from the horse's point of view?
Well, you do. I mean, you build them up for the meeting, and then you But you want to be here every day just to see, make sure that nothing goes wrong.
Okay.
That was interesting, actually. Someone texted me the last hour to say, had I been away down in Waterford in some hotel, and first I heard of it, so...
Right, okay. Because, well, I was going to ask you a follow-up question, but maybe it seems like it wasn't the case. But it was going to be, if you did taper things off more than normal, I was going to ask you, when you're on the gallops and you're watching them, what are you looking out for, or how do you measure where they are?
Well, a big part of our success is our, you know, staff, our team. And every day I'm asking them how they think their horse is going. And that I factor that in hugely with how I think he's going. Mm-hmm. And Ruby's been injured there the last few, you know, weeks, and he's been down most of the work days. And you know, he's there watching as well. He has a very good opinion. David Casey, Patrick, my son, they all have their own opinions, and we pool all the things together while we're on the gallop and maybe later on. But you're looking for horses' well-being. You're looking for horses not being sick, not coming down with any bits of coughs or colds or anything like that. And I think, you know, if you have them well, at this end of the season, they're fit. So if you have them well coming into the week, that's good. And, you know, we sort of look at, well, I look at the whole thing like preparing a football team, hurling team or whatever. You've got to get good morale, you've got to get the horses in good form, you know, having them, try to get them to peak as for the big meetings. And I think you can probably only get a horse to peak a couple of times a year. Mm-hmm. And so I try to do that. Like we skipped Aintree to try and have them ready for this meeting. Mm. And it's a gamble, you know. You're not guaranteed winners, and so if you skip a big meeting where there's lots of prize money, then to go for another meeting, you're not guaranteed that you're going to win. But
yeah,
so that's what we try and do.
Is that based on just a feel almost and experience? Like, you know, Premier League teams now will measure players' blood and various things, and they'll be put in the red zone if they're at risk of an injury, and it's all very, very scientific. I don't know, like, has racing kept up in that respect, or is it still down to experience and feel? And it's even interesting you talk about things like morale when it comes to horses.
Yes, yeah, you've got to keep their morale up, I think. No, I haven't gone, I mean, we do a certain amount of tests, but I haven't gone down the sort of heart monitor route. I leave that to just experience, you know.
Trusting yourself, essentially.
Trusting
yourself and your staff.
Yeah, I mean, I've put huge emphasis in staff and the way our team, and I put trust in them to tell me the right thing, and they build up their own confidence as well then, because they get... you know, they're part of what's going on, rather than just coming in and find their name on a board and writing out this horse, that horse, or the other horse. I try to keep them all together.
Yeah.
And, you know, so that everyone's on the one page.
Well, I suppose if they know you're going to solicit opinion and maybe act at times in their opinion, it will make them more engaged and more observant and more part of the whole thing. And I did sit down with Ruby Walsh last year, before Cheltenham, so it's a while ago now. But he did talk, and he's not prone to hyperbole, as I'm sure you know, Ruby. He's to the point. But he did talk about your ability to read a horse and to sense whether it needed more work or less work, or, you know, a bit of love or a bit of attention at times. And he did say, I mean, it was genius, that at times you might see something in a horse that others aren't seeing, be it needs a rest or whatever, just from watching it on the gallops. And he says, invariably, you tend to be proved right. And he wasn't quite sure how you managed to do it. I'm sure you're too modest to say that you're unique in that ability or in that respect.
But I'm sure lots of trainers do that. But
I'm sure they do. So how do you do it? I mean, have you made a ton of mistakes and you're the fruition of experience, or have you always had something of a sixth sense when it comes to horses? Well, I know you were born into it.
I say a ton of mistakes. Right. Experience is the best thing you're going to have, I think, over the years. And I've been lucky enough to be in my father's yard, and I spent a season with Jim Bulger, and, you know, two totally different ways of training, ways of approaching the business. You know, so just a whole lot put together along with just hard experience, you know, when you're putting your own money into horses, buying and selling horses, like we did when we started off, the whole model of racehorse training has changed now.
Yeah.
And we had to put our own money in and suffer the losses if they went down. And you learn, there's only one way to learn, and that's when you have your own few quid in. And, you know, you tend to mind horses rather than, you tend to mind them rather than sort of just gallop them and race them every day that there's a prize.
Yeah.
Because if you're lucky enough to get a good one, my theory has always been mind us, keep it for the big days.
Yeah.
Keep it for next year. There's a big difference between flat and jumping, I think. Flat trainers tend to maybe get two seasons out of a horse as a two-year-old and a three-year-old, and unless it's a really good horse, they sell them off and buy in a new batch of yearlings. They sell them off at three to buy in yearlings. Mm. Whereas in jump racing, you're going to have a four, five, six, maybe 7 or 8 year life with those horses. And any time they get a little injury, I always think you should mind them rather than risk another run on it. Mm. And it's disappointing at the time you're out for the season, but you get more longevity out of the horses. You know, they're like any athlete.
Sure.
You've got to preserve them, and I'd rather rest and recuperate than stress them. And maybe, you know, it's not good, I think. The less stress they get, the better, and they will repay you on the double. But you might have to wait a year for it. That's the one thing in this game. You've got to have patience. You've got to think in years rather than weeks.
Yeah. It's interesting you mentioned something like morale when it comes to horses, because I did jot down, I wanted to ask you, do you put much stock in a horse's character? Do you know the characters of the horses? I don't know how many you have currently, but clearly if you're talking about morale, their character is something you're aware of. What goes into keeping the morale of the actual horses themselves up over the course of a season?
You got to keep them happy. In other words, there's a fine line between doing too much work and too little. Some horses are very lazy and they're gross, they get fat. I mean, I've Mary DeVee there, she won the other day. And I'm looking at her all year. I'm training the hell out of her, and she's still fat, you know. So she came out and won the other day when she was badly needed. I was going to retire to stud, but I think I've just gone through the thing there today. I think I'm going to change my mind.
Right.
And keep her for another season and probably race her on the flat. But we've been keeping her too happy, I'd say. So, you know, some horses, if you overwork them, they will just, like anyone that's overworked, they will lose interest in the thing.
Yes.
So you have to, it's a fine line between getting them ready for festivals, for big races, working them very hard to get fit, but not overworking them and leaving your race behind. And that happens too as we get more young horses come into the place and we have to learn about them. And sometimes you overwork them, then you realize you actually can't do that with that horse.
Yeah.
You know, there's some horses there we think, I think he's 90% ready now, I'll give him one more gallop. And one more gallop actually puts him over the top.
Mm.
And this is where I think experience comes in. I've got to run him when I think he's 90% the next time. That's the time to run.
Mm.
And, you know, so that's just a very sort of easy way of explaining it.
Yeah.
So it's just experience. When you train them a certain way, if the horse runs well, you're doing it right. If he runs bad, well, then back to the drawing board and do something different the next time.
Yeah, no doubt. I saw a quote from your son Patrick over the weekend as well, or certainly in the last couple of weeks. I only read it over the weekend. And he was just saying, you know, around the time Michael O'Leary took his horses elsewhere, he looked at the operation and he sort of said, well, look, Dad's it would have been 62 at the time, I think. And he was almost looking on. I don't know if he said it to you, thinking, well, it mightn't be the worst time now to wind it down almost. We've had a great run. And instead...
he's a bit premature with my age. But anyhow, we'll
is he?
Move
right,
on.
Okay. Well, my apologies there. But instead... Yeah,
but I get the point.
You built new stadiums, or new stables, rather, and you improved things and revitalised the whole operation and actually went bigger and better and drove on. And I'm wondering if any part of you around the time of the O'Leary split thought, do you know what, maybe I have had a good innings and maybe it is time to wind things down into a slightly smaller, more manageable operation. You seem to have gone the other way, and I'm wondering, was that always the plan?
Always the plan. I mean, when what happened, it probably just made me more competitive, I think. And I certainly hadn't any idea of, I thought I might get smaller, but I thought that mightn't be, that might be just the way it was going to be. Mm. But I didn't ever feel that I wanted to get smaller. Not that maybe having a stable this big is, I never dreamt, who ever dreamt? I mean, when we were starting off, I often say this to Patrick, very, very successful trainers had 50 horses, and that was it, Ireland and England. Some of the flat yards in England might have had 100-plus horses. And, you know, so the sort of figures that are going around nowadays are unprecedented, I think. Mm. But as the game is evolving, as we're evolving, and we're lucky enough that we're getting offered these horses, and... this is once again the team we have. You know, our two buyers, two agents, one in Ireland, one in France. And they have to spot them and try and buy them, and then have a group of owners who are willing to pay for them. And I didn't want to get smaller anyhow, and I think I wanted to, you know, have a good strong team of horses.
Yeah.
And nowadays you wonder then, the amount of horses we have, I wonder, you know, is there a time that we are too big, or that we can't handle that? Would we be better off with a smaller number, or, mm. or stay at the number we're at and try and train those better?
Mm, sure.
But then I often think, you know, if you're not getting more horses, you have less chance of getting more better horses. You know, the more you put through your hands, the better chance you have of finding the one that we're all looking for.
Yeah. Kilkenny Tipperary, Sexton O'Gara, Willie Mullins, Gordon Elliott. We like rivalries in sport, and this has been a really interesting one to watch over the last while in Irish racing. The thing about rivalries is they put you under more pressure, but they can often bring out the best in you as well, and top rivals can egg each other on. What's it been like having Gordon Elliott emerge and put such pressure on you? Have you felt that pressure and that rivalry and the heat of it, or has it driven you on, or has it been business as usual?
Of course, we try and rise to it. Yes, it is pressure. It's because if you want to be the leading man in your sport, you, of course, there's pressure.
Yeah.
And yes, it has driven us on. It has made me do things that I wouldn't normally do. You have to try new things. And I thought primarily the rivalry is good for racing. And I think racing is probably the winner out of it. I mean, myself and Gordon, we're good pals, colleagues. And we get on with one another. Racing is small enough in Ireland, so we know we meet each other every day in the tea room, apart from in the weigh room or in the middle of the parade room or whatever. But so we're sort of under each other's feet at the races. And
so it'd be no fun if you were glaring at each other silently across the room.
No, I think the rivalry has brought out probably, it certainly brought a change in the way I do things.
Yeah. And when you said trying new things, like just new techniques, looking for small margins of improvement kind of thing, yeah?
Yeah, well, we always do every year when the thing is over, when the season is over, we look and see what we can do better for next year.
Sure.
And what we're going to keep, the horses, things like that, but and the techniques we use. And then, you know, as the season got into the real, the end of it this year, I certainly did things a little different. You know, we changed certain things, and a lot of them worked out. Some of them didn't, but that's what pressure brings out in a person, I think.
Yeah, no doubt. You've been very good with your time. Before you go, I think it would be remiss of me not to ask you about Katie Walsh, who retired along with Nina Carberry, obviously, and you worked very closely with Katie Walsh, and she paid tribute to you when she was announcing her retirement. Maybe for those of us, Willie, who have been very familiar with the two names of both jockeys, and you've been very familiar with Katie, obviously, from afar, and I've seen them break the mould, just the quality of their riding and what they brought to the sport might be worth touching on.
Yes, I think the first thing we must describe the two of them as, two fantastic jockeys, two good jockeys.
Yeah.
We're not using the word lady there. I would have Katie Walsh on my team of jockeys as an equal with any of the guys that she's riding against. And the other day when it came to looking for a jockey, there was jockeys everywhere. And, you know, to me, Katie is up there with any of the jockeys that I have riding for me. We'd have a regular team of about six jockeys. And Katie is on that team and always has been. So that, to me, is what she was. I never looked at her as a lady rider. I could trust her. I'd put her on horses in England, France, everywhere like that. And I would trust her that she'd do the right thing. She had the strength. She had the mental ability. A proper rider.
Yeah. But the stakes were too high from your point of view for charity.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I don't consider that. You know, to me, anyone that rides in my place, like any professional team, they must be good enough to ride. Mm. Katie was more than good enough.
Yeah. Yeah, no, fantastic career for the two of them, and they're getting all the good wishes they deserve. Listen, thanks so much for your time. There's plenty of texts coming in saying congratulations and well done, and no doubt Gordon Elliott's coming for you again next year, so it all kicks off again in no time.
It wouldn't be any fun if he wasn't. And no, we just like to say, you know, thanks to our staff, thanks to our owners, and, you know, that's what makes a great team, and I'm sure Gordon's team the same, you know. I think racing with the benefit, and delighted to be a part of it.
Okay, Willie Mullins, thanks very much.
Cheers. Thanks.
Off the ball.
Find us on Twitter at Off the Ball.
News Talk 106 to 108.